Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland. Thanks for coming back to my channel. This is about the general strike in the United Kingdom. Not now, thank goodness, but it's 100 years ago today. And a surprise not more has been made about the centenary of this, particularly by the far left. They're obviously very prominent with the Green Party now, with Jeremy Corbyn as your party, and with certain voices in the Labour Party. And so it was called by the General Council of Trades Union Congress. So trades union, in case you don't know, is a group of workers, usually a certain sector of the economy like transport or farming or manufacturing or whatever, and they create this trades union, they pay membership dues, and they use it to try to campaign for their betterment. I said for higher salaries, shorter hours of work, more health and safety equipment, greater rights not to be dismissed without good reason, and so forth, and try to negotiate with management. And if they don't get what they want, then they can go on strike refusing to work because they say, well, the employers cannot operate their workplace without workers. But some workers are more easily replaced than others. And if they're very low skilled, they can be replaced very easily. If they're very highly educated, it's all but impossible to replace them. So they tend to get better conditions. So this came in the aftermath of the First World War. First World War ending in 1918 and very much cast a shadow over the whole of the 1920s. The slump, as they called it. I think it's Lord Skidelsky's book, Politicians of the Slump. Unemployment just wouldn't go down, seldom below 10%. And obviously, in the UK, poverty back then was real poverty, not the pretend poverty we have now. I mean, there were plenty of adults who could only afford two meals a day. There are people who had just like only one pair of shoes with holes in it, whose clothes were rags, and so on, and living in hovels that were leaky, drafty, couldn't afford enough coal to keep warm. I don't think anyone starved to death, but there was suffering. I mean, George Orwell, if you have read Down and Out in Paris in London, when he tried being a tramp at this time, and the homeless men in London told him that in London, it is impossible to starve. There are plenty of charities and churches will give out free meals. Finding a bed for the night was more difficult, but there were homeless shelters even then. So there were paupers suffering severe penury at the time. So you really didn't want to be unemployed. And obviously, benefits then were just enough to keep body and soul together. But a lot of this is to do with coal, because coal a century ago was as important as oil is now. You see the fallout from the this war against Iran right now on oil, and almost everything is either directly or indirectly related to the price of oil. So coal production had gone up and up, but then coal production was falling in the 1920s, partly because of the easily to reach seams had been worked out. And then there was the Dawes plan with Germany, and then Germany giving some coal for free to France and Italy as war reparations. Now, a bit of that was sold on to the United Kingdom, but the other thing was also the cross elasticity. These countries were not importing coal from the from the UK, because they're getting it free from Germany and so forth. I mean, all countries produce some coal, but not necessarily enough for domestic needs. Winston Churchill came back as Chancellor of the Exchequer, and against his better judgment, he went along with the expert opinion, which is to bring back the gold standard, which is to say you could go into a bank anytime with pound note or whatever. There was a £1 note until recently, and exchange it for an amount of gold, or with a gold and go to bank and get some cash, because it gave people confidence that it had real value. But anyway, mine owners said they had to cut salaries because they'd lost profit and so on. So the miners' pay was being reduced from £6 to £3, 18 shillings over 7 years. That's a massive cut. Who wouldn't fight that one? There was a talk about also making them work longer hours. The Miners' Federation didn't like that one. They had the slogan, not a penny off the pay, not a minute on the day, and so on. What was to happen? There was a Conservative government, Stanley Baldwin was prime minister, suggesting that the government would pay a subvention, allow for 9 months for the miners' wages, even that were to happen. But what about in the longer term? Coal was vital for domestic heating, for trains. Ships were mostly oil by then, for factories and so forth. So what was to happen? So there was a Samuel Commission by Herbert Samuel, a Liberal politician, suggested a 13.5% reduction in miners' wages. But the Prime Minister said, well, we're going to go along with this. The general strike, they negotiated, negotiations finally failed on the 1st of May, happened starting on the 4th of May, just after the May Bank Holiday weekend. So the Trades Union Congress called the strike is not just miners, but other people in sympathy with it. Railway workers, some factory workers, dockers, builders, some farm labourers, bus drivers and so forth. Okay, so going on strike. Now, the Labour Party was unsure about this. The Labour Party had grown out of the trades unions. Some people on the far left have suggested a general strike to simply bring down the Conservative government and the capitalist system generally, have a communist takeover. And Labour was worried that there were some hotheads who were real revolutionaries, because the Labour Party and the Communist Party were not far apart at that time. Some people were simultaneous members of both. People like Sakad Lava, the communist MP, was only elected because Labour stood aside for him, and so on. And some Labour people openly lauded Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, who died only 2 years earlier. Another thing is they were overlooking the fact that the equivalent of the Labour Party in the Soviet Union was absolutely crushed, was criminalized, they were sent to slave labor camps. Any socialists who believed in democracy will have elections, will have free expression, will have fair trials, will have a multi-party system. They were sent to slave labor camps by communists. Communists treated other socialists extremely badly. Anyway, they were not able to reach an agreement, so it went ahead. Some printers refused to print certain newspapers. The Daily Mail was totally against. But the Daily Mail wanted to say that really this is not simply about improving workers' conditions. He's trying to overthrow the government. He's trying to subvert parliament. King George V tried to be the referee again in this dirty game of politics, and arguing that you shouldn't be so judgmental about these strikers. Could you live on that salary and so on? The Communist Party of Great Britain was totally in favour of the strike. And so it went on. So the Cardinal Bourne, the Catholic Archbishop, Archbishop of Westminster, so the leader of the Catholics in England and Wales, denounced the strike because he said it was against lawful authority and so forth, even though quite a few of the strikers were Catholics and so on. So up to 1,750,000 people went on strike. Might seem quite small. Bear in mind the population in the UK was 45 million back then. Okay, so you think of their children, their pensioners, a lot of housewives who didn't work. So of those who actually worked, this is maybe 10% of the population. But, you know, how many people were in trades unions? It's thought that up to 40% of people were members in trades unions. But notably, even most trades unionists didn't strike. Not all trades unions were affiliated to the TUC. Some people were in a trades union that was affiliated to the TUC and didn't strike. Of course, the middle class unions like the British Medical Association and so forth. The National Union of Students had been founded at this time. And undergraduates were usually very middle class, and often they were against the strike. And some people volunteered, particularly bourgeois people, to fill in, to try and keep the economy going, to drive buses or trains, I don't know, they learned to do that, or something, to make sure that the strike would fail, believing this would precipitate a revolution. So Churchill created a British government newspaper, the British Gazette, because, of course, some newspapers couldn't be printed, the printers refused to work. Okay, all right. So that was it. So, and then special constables were organised as in people to help out the police who had minimal training and so forth. People thought that members of the British Union of Fascists might join it, even though the fascism was really tiny in the UK at the time. What didn't really exist. Okay, so some striking miners, they derailed the Flying Scotsman, that very fast train from London to Edinburgh. So what on earth was going to happen? Anyway, it all failed after about 12 days. Now, the miners carry on striking for a few more months. I mean, one of their fatal mistakes was to start striking in the summer when coal wasn't needed so much. Longer hours of sunlight, plus it's warmer, we don't need so much heating and so forth. So by November, even that was over. It really backfired on the miners because more coal mines were closed down. But productivity went up. Yeah, partly they said, we'll just give up on the mines which are not so profitable. We'll concentrate the ones that are really going to work. So a new law came in, the Trade Disputes and Trades Union Act 1927, said you cannot strike in sympathy with someone else. The strike's got to be about your industry. It can't be a general strike. Mass picketing, I don't know how you define that. At what point is it mass if you stand outside the relevant place with your placard chanting slogans? So trade unions were all paying money to the Labour Party. And this change where trade unions had to opt in. It wasn't an automatic assumption that they would pay a subsidy to the Labour Party. And that was it. Okay, goodness. So what say you, the national strike, is it a good thing it failed or is it a terrible thing? Nobody's proposing any more. So, yeah. And sort of about 20 years ago, trade union membership was its lowest ever. Apparently, about 10% of workers were in it. It has gone up more recent years. Thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.